This is an audiobook on tape of part four of Boiling Point, a novel, The Breakup of the United States and Its Citizens, by Tom Merritt. Beginning part four with Jeff, 2, Denver, Colorado. Now, Jeff, this isn't going to be like Central America or even Belize, Professor Croslin leaned forward towards me. He filled his suit, but wasn't fat. He had curly black hair and round glasses. When he leaned forward, it was kind of like having a pile driver waved in your face. This is a technologically advanced and well-developed area. They are literate and not really poor at all. In fact, you could say it's the reverse of Central America because the U.S. is, in a sense, the one being oppressed, not doing the oppressing, for once. He made one of his characteristic dramatic feints with a finger and leaned back in his chair. I nodded and looked out the window at the students hustling back and forth to class amid the oranges and browns of fall. I've heard that they treat everyone fairly equally, though. I was afraid Croslin would back out of the program at any moment. I was also trying to get him to let me take Faye along. I felt uneasy leaving her behind in Colorado. More than that, I envisioned us having a wonderful, exciting, and maybe even hair-raising time bouncing around in the Lakota Nation. You know, I wasn't going to let Croslin get me down. Croslin was going on about the egalitarianism of the Lakota. Still, it's hard to say. The word from my friends at SDU, who can still get on the net, is that if you accept Lakota sovereignty, you're fine. But if you're emigrating or are stupid enough to move to a reservation, then you really get rode hard by everyone. You can see why I'm concerned about sending you, a citizen of the U.S., in there, especially since you're a photographer, which always carries ominous overtones to a young government or insurrectionary force. The assignment has changed, then. Yes, my young master of the understatement, the assignment has changed. Croslin leaned forward again. But not entirely. You're still focusing on local culture and customs in the Black Hills, but the culture has changed the assignment from a breezeway to spend grant money into one hell of an opportunity to document history. I suppressed a grin and looked straight into Professor Croslin's eyes. I knew Croslin admired me. He lived vicariously through me to a certain extent. If I played it cool enough, I might just nudge him into letting Faye come. I guess I don't mind. Croslin smirked. All right, Jeff, you get your cool self off to that party. Are you coming? I put on my backpack and stepped behind the small wooden swivel chair I'd been sitting in. I hoped he would. Faye and I could work on him tag team in the more pliable atmosphere of the party. I'll be there late. There are a few things I have to take care of at the dean's office. They don't want you to go alone. I'll work it out. Faye could really help me out on this, I ventured, holding my breath. She's been out on shoots enough times before and really was an asset, you know. Normally, you know, I wouldn't mind. I respect your friend Faye very much, but this is somewhat of a danger spot. The university doesn't want to take on more liability than it must with this. So she'll come along anyway. The Lakota Nation might have something to say about that. Now out. I've got work to do. Okay, see you tonight. I biked down to the departmental party at Professor Jones' house. Laughter and murmuring poured out of the window. Professor Jones barely held on to a position at the university, often calling in sick to class the day after his parties. However, when he did show up, he espoused some of the most brilliant theories on aesthetics that the department had ever heard. I noticed Faye's bike as I locked up mine and hurried inside. Music, smoke, and chatter floated toward me through the front door. In the Victorian mansion-like front room, a group of 5 people, including Faye, gathered around a desk set. It and a large, overstuffed lime-green chair with the word Nirvana embroidered on it were the only objects in the room. "Hey!" smiled Faye as she sauntered over to me. "All us geeks are just waiting for the news." Faye wore a white dress with little red ribbons. She called it her Terry Spellman outfit after the popular actress. I usually teased her about it just to watch her pretend not to care. I let it go this time. "What else is shaken?" Faye sucked on a beer while she talked. "Not much. Did you get the trip stuff worked out?" "Yeah, I'm going to make them let me take you with me." "For sure?" A slight hope hid behind her eyes. I loved her eyes. "Not for sure, but damn close. Maybe you should use your womanly wiles when Croslin shows up." Faye smacked me gently. "Shh, interview starting. Some big chef from Harvard who everyone here thinks is going to tell Jack DeLeo to shove it or something." It's 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and this is American Belief Radio's America in Crisis. I'm Jack DeLeo. Thanks for joining us. Our guest this evening is Dr. Jaime Montagua, a professor of political science at Harvard University in Massachusetts. He'll join us in just a moment. First, the news. For American Belief Radio News, I'm Greg Whitney. Another trouble spot flared up in the West today. A coalition of white supremacists in Lewiston, Idaho, declared the Aryan Nation independent. The Aryans claim a vast territory that stretches into parts of Washington, Montana, and Oregon. Idaho state officials confirmed that the group only holds any power in Lewiston, Idaho, and the surrounding mountains. The uprising comes only a few days after the Montana government reached a settlement with the Profector, a cult group which owns a large amount of land in rural Montana. Utah passed a bill today making secession automatic if Nevada secedes from the U.S. Nevada is currently dominated by the so-called Peace Party, which has unofficially united California and Nevada as a republic. Wichita, Kansas received more shelling from Texas militia troops who are trying to capture that town for the Texas Republic. In Wichita, Jack Wilson has more. Jack Wilson began shouting from the field over the sound of gunfire. Lately, the names of Sarajevo, Beirut, and Stalingrad quite often pass the lips of the besieged residents of Wichita. The people who at one time were loud supporters of American nationalism now feel abandoned and betrayed by the federal government. Residents do not understand why there has been no U.S. Army to meet the Texans. In the meantime, the town has no money for hospitals, schools, or police, which are badly needed now. Still, the frontier spirit lives in this city as its volunteer militia bravely holds off the Texans. Pride, once directed at the nation, is now directed at their own children as they fight, and sometimes die, protecting the city. In Wichita, Kansas, Jack Wilson reporting. Thank you, Jack. On the other front, the Texans met little resistance in Arkansas as they continued their march towards Little Rock. Finally, the gangs that control Chicago and Detroit signed a pact which aims to unite the two groups in a city-state alliance. Mayor Daley of Chicago called the act repulsive and evil. He spoke from his temporary headquarters in Springfield, Illinois. For American Belief Radio, I'm Greg Whitney. This is America in Crisis. I'm Jack DeLeo. With me is Dr. Jaime Montagua of Harvard University, a political scientist. Thank you for being with us, Dr. Montagua. My pleasure. There have been many analyses of the troubles in the West, but the most difficult problem seems to be Texas. How serious are they, and what demands must be met to stop them? Well, they're very serious, Jack. They're using guns, after all. They're shooting people, killing people. I believe that's about as serious as you can get. I don't think anything will stop them. A stunned silence dragged on while Jack collected himself. Are you saying that we are expecting or experiencing some kind of permanent dissolution here? Absolutely. People have to quit hiding their heads in the sand. The federal government of the U.S. is broke. States have had to shoulder more and more of the burden of government until states like Texas have learned to get along without the federal government. The military law and threat of organized violence has scared most states into drastic action. Texas is just capable of taking more drastic action than some others. DeLeo paused again. Well, then surely the same does not apply to the Lakota or California. I don't see why not. The Lakota crisis could have been avoided, but the U.S. mismanaged it. That has given popular groups like the California Peace Party the courage to act. It's becoming a question of survival for states. If the power gap of the federal government is left to be filled by community groups like in California and Chicago, states risk dissolution. I wouldn't be surprised to see more moves like Utah's and more state coalitions for mutual protection. The show continued with Jack DeLeo trying to hold on to the idea that the U.S. could not possibly break apart. The doctor simply returned to his thesis of ineffective federal government and the pressures of crime. Callers seemed to back up Mr. Montagua if they were from areas outside the East Coast. With the Lakota uprising stabilized and the U.S. confined to the Sioux Falls area, people already seemed comfortable with their new homelands. The show took calls from people in places they identified as Pierre Lakota Nation and Oklahoma City, Texas. People in Texas were belligerent and blamed the U.S. for Texas secession. Most people calling from the Lakota Nation waxed eloquently about the improvement of the government there. After finishing our informal analysis of the talk show, we abandoned ourselves to the party. I vowed to myself not to bring up the Lakota trip for fear of cursing it. Even when Professor Crosland showed up later, we said very little about it. Eventually, as usual, Professor Jones cornered me. I stood next to the desk set, and he stood blocking any avenue of escape. He held a Budweiser and went on about the Eurojazz show now coming over ABR. "'Cause the people don't have any control over it, that's why. Now you take, He paused while his eyes rolled around in his head looking for the rest of the sentence. "'You take the band... Have you ever heard of a 1990s band called Nirvana?' Here we go again. Professor Jones, despite his incredible intellect, was fascinated with a late 20th century garage band called Nirvana. If allowed, he would lecture me for hours on all their finer points. I braced myself and wished for a tornado, blizzard, or some other act of God to deflect him from his train of thought. We had been having a great conversation about cultural icons and their increasingly diversified nature among social subgroups. I racked my brain for a way to distract him. Damn, his beer was full. No hope there, at least not for the next 5 minutes. Nirvana was the first band ever. He took a swig. Bigger, I encouraged him in my mind. Bigger swigs. Drink, man, drink. The first band ever. Suddenly, the desk set saved me. The Eurojazz show that had inspired Professor Jones to his Nirvana reverie cut off abruptly and was replaced by a loud emergency news announcement. Everyone shut up, even Jones. We interrupt you for an American Belief Radio News emergency update. Let's join Jack Wilson in Little Rock. Jack? Motors revved and trucks rolled over gravel as Jack Wilson brought another report from the field. He was either superhuman or his previous report from a half an hour earlier had been taped because he was now live from Little Rock. Thank you, Jerry. I'm actually outside Little Rock in Camp Joseph T. Robinson, where militias from Arkansas and Missouri and even some troops from Kentucky and Illinois are amassing in what until now was a secret alliance of peoples of the Ozarks. No official statement has been made. It seems several regions in northern Arkansas and southern Missouri, however, are banding together to fight the Texas onrush, which until now has met no resistance in this small state. In Little Rock, Arkansas, Jack Wilson reporting. Thank you, Jack. The U.S. government refuses to comment, but seems to be granting the Ozark Coalition tacit support. The Texas government dismissed the coalition, stating Texas is not at war, but simply moving into territory that considers itself part of Texas. They point to the previous lack of resistance as evidence of this. American Belief Radio will keep you up to date as more information becomes available. This has been an emergency report from American Belief Radio News. Damn, ABR! Professor Jones couldn't hide his disgust. They faked that report earlier from Wichita for cheap effect. Bullshit. The trouble with ABR. His words were drowned out by a plane flying low overhead. Gehrig, 1, Camp Joseph T. Robinson. Throughout the entire flight, Kolbrowski drilled me on the rites and rituals of the Ozarkian structure. My mind wandered. The Ozarkans were fantastically ritualistic. I would have to take an oath when we landed. If I couldn't recite it from memory, I wouldn't be allowed into their army. Kolbrowski droned on in a schoolmaster's tone. There are 4 divisions to Ozarkia and 6 political parties. You won't have to worry about party affiliation just yet, but I'll tell them you're with me in the Ozark People's Coalition. It's the right-leaning middle group. We deplaned in Camp Robinson and headed for the processing desk. Kolbrowski approached the man sitting behind the desk. Platonic Republican OPC Coordinator First Class Mackie Kolbrowski. The man seemed to recognize Kolbrowski. Right. Who's this? This is former U.S. citizen Robert Boone Gehrig, unassigned, temporary OPC, no rank. Will he swear the resistance oath? The situation overwhelmed me, and I could barely squeak out a reply. Raise your right hand and repeat the oath from memory. We, the peoples of the Ozarks, with mutual respect for a creed and beliefs of all people herein, do resist the oppression and disrespect of any force which attempts to poison and destroy our way of life. We commit ourselves to combat and eradicate those forces from the domain of the Ozark people. Kolbrowski let out a sigh. He wouldn't have to send me back to St. Louis. Right, processor barked. Take him to 5. The Ozark People's Coalition assigned me the rank of coordinator second class slash driver to serve in Kolbrowski's unit. All recruits served with their recruiter for the first few weeks to deter any espionage and put the responsibility for the recruit's action in the hand of the recruiter. As I finished suiting up in a small barracks area, Kolbrowski swaggered in. You gonna be ready to hit the road soon? Sure, why waste time? That's it. I gotta get ready to brief the unit. And Gehrig? I won't have time to train you on recovery. That means if we get split up or captured, all I can say is keep your eyes peeled and get out. Better yet, let's just not get captured, driver. I nodded and smiled. I was happy with the amount of confidence Kolbrowski showed in me. He had implicit faith in all people until he had reason to believe otherwise. I finished suiting up and headed across the camp to the briefing room. The Ozarkians looked like an army inasmuch as they had military hardware. They wore military uniforms of many different styles. Some even wore firefighter or police uniforms, and others just had on whatever felt most comfortable. They'd given me a green OPC uniform that consisted of a green Oxford worn unbuttoned over a black T-shirt and black jeans. I stopped and watched an older woman giving orders to a group hoisting a car out of a ditch. White-hot spirit infected each one of them as they heaved the old Buick back onto the road. They didn't look overworked, hard-pressed, or discouraged. They looked determined. That's what they had that the Texas Army didn't. They believed in what they did, right down to the last soldier. Even if it didn't work, the Ozarkians couldn't really lose. The other 13 people in Kolbrowski's unit lounged in a conference room. John was with them and waved for me to come sit next to him. I sat down and only had time to exchange a brief greeting with him before Kolbrowski walked in and started the briefing. The 1st Southern Illinois Ozarkians, the only unit from Illinois, would deploy at the northern rim of Little Rock. We would raise Diversionary King while the St. Louis Elite Ozarkians flanked the Texans and moved closer in. All right, folks, that's it. Garrick will drive my car. We're strapped for good drivers, and he's training cop driving, so we can count on him. No worries. Kolbrowski noticed the group looked worried anyway. Listen, I let him drive me in rush hour traffic many times. There was gunfire then, too. Everyone laughed. Our unit had 3 unmarked sedans modified with bulletproof exteriors and rifle slots. The gunners for my car assembled and introduced themselves to me as they got in. A man with shaggy brown hair and a lanky build spoke first. I'm Kelly Hutchinson from El Dorado, Illinois, but everybody calls me Hutch. I'm the car marksman. Let's go get him. Shut up, Hutch, a man peered out from behind, grinning. I'm Marty Cantrell. Good to meet you. Don't let Hutch's professional manner get you down. He can actually shoot. John got in the back seat with Hutch and Cantrell. I swung around to the driver's side, and Kolbrowski got in the front passenger seat. I drove the lead car out of the gate and on to Camp Robinson Road. Turn here. Kolbrowski barked orders at me, but I reacted pretty naturally for being thrown directly into combat. I had trained in firearms and criminal pursuit driving and had extensive experience in outdoor war games and reenactments. In a way, the whole thing wasn't real to me. It seemed like a weekend out on the simulator. I spun the wheel into a desolate suburban development. We drove a few miles and began to receive gunfire from a shopping center. Our 3 cars spread out into side streets and parking lots and began shooting up whatever we could find. I rammed the car into the side of a Pizza Hut, and the others began clearing the building of windows. I hated working for them, I yelled. I already felt high on the excitement. Yeah, but their breadsticks are good, Cantrell shouted over the engine. Something caught Kolbrowski's eye, and he cut the banter short. Sniper's in the cosmetic shop. Take her around, Garrick. I drove along the sidewalk by the cosmetic shop. Glass burst in front of us as a tank rolled out of the Walgreens. Shit! I turned hard left, squealing the tires. Kolbrowski's rasping voice barely rose above the din. Floor it south! It'll take them a minute to get up to speed. They weren't supposed to have tanks. Yeah, Hutch, well, we didn't pour a ton of money into intelligence. Kolbrowski turned his attention back to the battle. The tanks took a while to get rolling, and I was sure I could get out of range. I sped through the emptying parking lot, avoiding the cement barriers and opening up a good distance. The sun set and streetlights began to come on. I took us away from the tanks, our gunners shooting out streetlights as I went. A green truck appeared directly in front of me, and I swung the car hard into a side street. I smiled at the thrill of the chase and caught Kolbrowski looking at me wide-eyed. I looked up to see a brick wall meet the front of our sedan. Steve, 7, Austin, Texas. Okay, I'm going. Helen put on her backpack. Right. I got up to kiss her goodbye. Helen looked tired. Her eyes drooped and her shoulders drooped and her asthma had been getting worse. Her only job lead, the UN job, had disappeared when the Republic banned the UN provisional staff. There seemed to be nothing left for her but to get out. I was trying like mad to do just that. Mulu was on the case. It'll get better, I stroked her hair reassuringly. And if it doesn't get better, we'll make it get better. I've been thinking we'll have to do something. And we can, so don't get all down, okay? I smiled and hugged her. She nodded, and we kissed again. I didn't believe 25% of what I just told her. Simone popped into my mind involuntarily. It happened all the time. What if I would have left Helen for her? Maybe I'd be in New Mexico with her now instead of Sam. Not that I begrudged Simone to Sam. They were perfect for each other. But ever since my fling with Simone 2 years ago, my relationship with Helen had become much rockier. I decided it was best not to dwell on things like that. It only made things worse. Helen could sense when I'd been thinking about it, and it usually led to an ugly, passive-aggressive scene of some sort. I went over to the desk set and decided to check my mail. There was a message from Mark Camdell, whom I hadn't heard from since before the budget crisis. I wondered now what would have happened if I'd moved out to L.A. Mark had been really hot on getting me out there. I told myself to stop the what-would-have-happened stuff. I wasn't that unhappy with Helen. There's no way I would have ever gone to California anyway. I just didn't believe in organizations like the CPP. I was surprised Mark had joined. Mark had always believed more in direct action than I had, but Mark was also a fierce individualist. I wondered how Mark got along in a martial organization like the CPP. There was the time back in Illinois when Mark worked for me that he began saluting everyone at work and wearing military garb. He reached the limit when he began blasting military marches and referring to the general manager as Herr Director. I barely saved his ass from the GM. I saved Mark's ass at that net radio station quite often, actually. I was really glad I didn't have to anymore. I missed the radio days, but I didn't miss the aggravation. Mark's message popped up on the screen. To Stephen at retail.hpb.com. From UC Maurer at culture.cpp.poll. Regarding all this jazz. Steve! Crazy, ain't it? I'm no longer a lieutenant. I'm now Under Secretary of Culture, which means, well, what I can tell you, that I'm in charge of all press and media liaisons and releases. Harmless, really, but a steady job. I mean, we just took over a large western state. Can't be all bad. Things are moving, though. Gotta run. I'll let you know when it's clear to come visit if the Texans will let you out. Mark. Not funny. They might not. The border controls were getting stricter. The Texans didn't want anyone leaving or entering the country while the war rolled on. They felt that was the best way to ensure security. Of course, everyone was still free to go anywhere they wanted. Of course, if you tried to cross the border, there would suddenly be a fee you hadn't paid, or your insurance magically expired, or your license was no longer applicable, or your flight had been indefinitely canceled. Still, with the help of Mulu and Denton, I thought we might slip across into Oklahoma. Although it was part of Texas, it was easier to get across an Oklahoma border than a Texas one. Mostly because there were small wars raging on most of Oklahoma's borders. We had to visit Mulu soon. The next message came from Kolbrowski. To Stephen at retail.hpb.com from Plato's pal at kennedy.siue.edu regarding, can't tell you much, but I'm leaving Greenville for a while and don't know when or if I'll be back. Gehrig's coming with me. We'll drop a line somewhere, hopefully, later. Colby. I didn't like the tone or implications of that message at all. It finally dawned on me that Kolbrowski must be involved in this Ozarkian thing in some way. Of course, he always went on about Plato and Nietzsche and the need for resistance. It made perfect sense. The last message was from Frank Lenkel, my friend who lived in Chicago. I'd been worried about him and hadn't been able to get a hold of him. I didn't recognize his new address. To Stephen at retail.hpb.com from F. Lenkel at security.ohare.aaf.gov regarding this will be read. Hey, guess what? I'm working for the man who took down the man. I'm checking security people. I don't get any vacation time, so if you come up to Chicago, be sure to stop in and say hi. Hope the Texans aren't maiming you like they're doing to us here. Sell the children, Frank. I almost wrote Frank to explain that I hoped we'd be flying through Chicago soon and would let him know. I thought better of it. It made me angry that I couldn't reply the way I wanted. I got up and paced around. We had to get away from Texas soon. In the back of my mind, I thought maybe we could get by and get out after the war. No way. Not only couldn't I stand the idea of the Texas Republic, but Helen was in danger. The stress of the situation was wearing away at our relationship, too. I browsed through the message boards. Every posting had something to do with the current state of upheaval. I found a rewrite of Route 66. Route 66 Main Street, U.S., Chicago, Ozarkia, Texas, California. If you plan to motor west with ease, travel my way, take the highway that's under siege. Get your kicks on Route 66. It winds from Chicago to L.A., although Chicago seceded yesterday. Watch out for troops on Route 66. Now you go through St. Louis, Joplin, Ozarkia, Oklahoma City is part of Texas now, see Amarillo, avoid shots in Gallup, New Mexico, Flagstaff, California, if not yet, I warn you, Kingman, Barstow, San Bernardino are part of the CPP's timely plan to chop 66 up across the land. Don't get shot on Route 66. I messed around some more and clicked over to the ABR netcast. A coalition of militias in the northern regions of Arkansas and southern Missouri have declared themselves independent. The so-called People's Republic of the Ozarks say they formed to fight the invasion of Arkansas by Texas. In a surprise move, the United Nations granted the Lakota Nation conditional recognition. The UN calls it a gesture of goodwill towards the upstart nation, which, unlike the Texas Republic, has pursued mostly peaceful means to end its conflict with the United States. The governor of Utah signed legislation granting special powers to any group which can defend its borders. The California Peace Corps is occupying Nevada, placing troops along the borders of Utah and Arizona. And finally, Montana formed a coalition of state militias and police forces to battle the Aryan Nation in northern Idaho and deter further Lakota expansion. Idaho and Wyoming joined Montana in the coalition. Candell, 2, Carson City, Nevada. There's no way that story can release. Of course. Well, first of all, the government behind that is useless. Amend your own damn constitution, then. All I'm saying is, shut up. I'm telling you that unless you want a public panic in Reno with a bunch of thugs and looting just like Texas, you better hold that story. It's not censorship. Yeah. Listen, print that story and a town's ruination and all the death and destruction that go with it are on your head. I slammed down the phone. Carol, get me the star sheets on last night's netcast. Slow down, honey. We only got one state here. Stephanie patted my head as she breezed by. Thanks. I grabbed the stat sheets. Hey, Vince, can we get ABR on the line? Their netcast rating is sky high, and they're calling this a takeover. Consider it done. Vince immediately picked up a phone. Stephanie popped her head back into the room. Mark, can I see you for a minute? Yes. It was the first time either of us had talked privately in 2 solid days. I walked into her office and closed the door. I hate that feeling when you've both been having conversations in your head with each other but haven't talked, so you don't know really where anything stands. She sat down and began poring over some papers. Look, I know it's busy, but couldn't we take a break? I looked at her imploringly. Yes, I miss you too, but, she sighed, I've got some disturbing intelligence here. I've always admired your intelligence. No, sweetheart, these reports, she waved toward a collection of papers. According to them, there's a high probability of riots in Arizona and New Mexico. And that could mean Southern Cal, too. I settled down to business. And Texas. She looked hard at me. War? Well, the other part of the report says Texas is planning to invade New Mexico and Arizona to protect them if riots do break out. CPP Central decided we should assist Arizona in such a case and block Texas from taking anything past New Mexico. So we're talking a police action. Nope. Just taking over Arizona. Permanently? That depends on UN reaction. They haven't even talked about us yet, so we have no idea how they'll interpret it, but we've decided to cooperate with them, unlike Texas. So in other words, we'll hold Arizona for the UN, they'll give us a chunk of desert in thanks, and send us back down I-10. And guess who gets to handle the cultural affairs? She smiled like a plastic clown. My eyes shriveled up inside my head. A low moan escaped from somewhere near my intestines. I didn't like how nonchalantly Stephanie was handling our upcoming separation. Yes, honey, be careful out there, and I mean that. The Arizona Peace Party is extremely small and unpopular, but it's our 4th largest behind Washington State's. You'll have a hookup in Tucson, a unit of advanced militia folks, and the entire APP at your disposal. Your main task is to meet with the Native American group there and try to secure some kind of cooperative agreement. Wait, that's diplomacy's job, not culture. They threw it to culture because they're short-staffed in diplomacy, and part of it is a cultural matter with the Native Americans. I nodded my head. Yeah, I guess I can see that. When do I leave? Tonight. Tonight? My shriek made her look away, too quickly for my liking. I had a hard time keeping the wild banshees from my voice. Who recommended me for this? Central wanted someone from cultural and told me I couldn't be spared, so we just went down the line. So you recommended that I be sent away into a danger zone for an indefinite amount of time? That's what happened. You can't deny it. No, Mark, don't look at it that way. What way am I supposed to look at it? This Nevada thing is a great excuse for avoiding me. Maybe I'm overreacting, but it seems like we could have caught a few minutes here and there. And look, Mark, if you're going to be like this, maybe one of us should... I don't know. Listen, Mark, the point is don't doubt me. We should never have gotten involved if we're going to be in a command structure together. Would it make you feel better if we had dinner together tonight? Some. The wind leaked slowly from my sails. The banshees fled. All the nasty names I'd been storing up to fling at her died on my lips. Okay, now pretend I kissed you passionately, since we agreed not to do that in the office, and we'll meet at 7. She turned away and was gone. Not physically, just in any locale I could reach. I gave up and left the office, feeling as if I'd just lost Wheel of Fortune because I couldn't remember the phrase, "All's fair in love and war." Pardon the metaphor. I went back to the reports and began giving the contact at the ABR War Desk a taste of the Banshee. That ends part 4 of Boiling Point.